We know that buying our first home, we need to think about the long-term effects and not just the short-term, I've got some cash, let's go and buy a property. Today, we're going to talk about buying our first home to live in. We're going to talk about some strategic options, including free vesting and rent vesting. We've got a heap of stuff to thrash out. Emily's got some expertise in the first home buying space, and then I'll just make up some stuff after that. I'm John Pidgeon, and this is Property.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Emily.
John.
Buying your first home. You are the master. Talk to us about the things we need to, or our listeners need to think about when buying our first home, because it's such a broad topic, isn't it, in the media. It's like, okay, how do you buy your first home? But there's so many facets to buying our first home.
Of course. And I think the biggest thing is there's been a lot of media coverage recently, and even just on the likes of TikTok and Instagram, following some of the creative news reports around the fact that the Great Australian Dream is no longer achievable, which I think is very misleading for starters, and can put a whole dampener on the idea of someone owning their own home. So if you're listening to this feeling like, it's impossible, how could I possibly own my own home? Don't lose hope, because John and I help people every day to buy property. You can get into property. It's about how you go about it and the long-term plan that you have in place to make sure it's doable.
Yeah, and I may have contributed to that because I said the Great Aussie Dream is over. And what I meant by that was maybe it's for the person or the teenager that's living in a blue chip suburb in Sydney or Melbourne, to go and buy their first home in that particular suburb is extremely hard, if not impossible, for a lot.
Exactly.
Now, when we say buying our first home, generally we're thinking our first home to live in, because that is the Great Aussie Dream. So let's touch on that for a start.
I think the biggest mindset going into that is understanding your first home is typically not your forever home. I've actually helped a lot of first-time buyers who are later in life first-time buyers, and it will be their forever home, but that's not typically what happens. Usually late 20s to mid-30s is sort of first-time buyer territory, and what we look at is a stepping stone property. That means the property gets you into the market and it is the stepping stone into the next thing that you're going to achieve, which might be more of a family home, a larger home, a different area. It's getting into the market.
So if we unpack that for a minute, what we really need to think about is what that next home may be going to look like, because if we go in all guns blazing and getting ourselves a one-bedroom unit in our local area where we've still got the lifestyle, we've still got friends and family around us and everything that we do locally, what's that upgrade going to look like, and when potentially is it? Because I could be sitting here single at 22 and then in maybe 5 years' time, all of a sudden I'm married with maybe one on the way. It's a very different dynamic, isn't it?
Exactly. And it's funny when I speak to first-time buyers about this, they're like, but I don't know what the future holds. I am single. I don't know if I'm going to have a family. I don't know if I'm going to move for work. So you control the controllables. And I think the biggest thing to focus on is how can I ensure this property grows in value? Yes, it's my first home. It's not my forever home. So what are the avenues I could use? For example, we don't want to buy a dud. Like, you don't want to walk away in 5 years' time and be at a net zero. You don't want to just make your costs back on stamps or, buying and selling costs, that sort of thing. Is there potential for value add? Is there potential that you move one suburb over and you're in an area that is set for growth? Although it's not the primary driver of your purchase, it might be a factor in the purchase. How do we ensure that we're not starting from back to zero baseline when we go to springboard into our next property?
Because really when we do springboard, we need more cash or more equity.
Mm-hmm.
So we either need to have paid down that home in that, say, five-year example that you've given, or we need to be saving cash on the side. Either way, that's they're both in our control. Mm-hmm. But what isn't in our control is the growth of the property. So we buy in at 600K.
Yep.
In 5 years' time, you're saying net zero, it's still worth 600K.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So how much emphasis is now put on the capital growth aspect of what we buy versus I don't want to live in that suburb or I don't want to live in that unit?
And it's such a balance really, because if you go to one extreme, and obviously we're going to talk about alternative methods in the second half of this podcast around potentially rent vesting and that sort of thing. But if you want to buy your first home to live in, there needs to be a level of strategic investment involved in that process if it is a stepping stone property to get into the next. And most people that come to me for help, I think like the conversation goes the same every time. This property is a 5 to 7 year plan until I'm ready to go potentially and change my lifestyle further out in the suburbs for a larger home.
So what's the weight of lifestyle versus finances, logic, capital growth, wealth?
I think if you're purely focusing on lifestyle alone, which typically, and this is not for everybody, but generally speaking, lands people in the inner ring of the CBD in an apartment, so they have the amenity at their doorstep. That's the kind of the lifestyle piece. Then the question would be, should you be buying this property as a place to live in versus renting it? Then the balance of that becomes, is there a hybrid? And this is why we buy a lot of villa units. Is there a hybrid of having an area that's still accessible to all the amenity, has an element of land, but is not an apartment?
Can you explain a villa unit to the new listeners?
Yeah. So also known just as a unit or just as a villa. I say villa unit to cover all bases. It's those blocks people go, oh, they look like retirement villages. They're not. They're the 70s, 80s brick builds, usually a driveway down one side, 4 to 6 units in a row, and they have 2 bed, 1 bath, a garage that was probably built for cars in the 80s that might not fit your car in it today.
Bit low.
And a courtyard. Yeah, very skinny.
Yeah.
And a courtyard and low body corporate fees, because you're just covering the driveway insurance, and quite good for value add, particularly if you get an original condition one where everything's in the right spot, structurally don't change anything, but cosmetically enhance.
Okay. So I'm sitting here listening to this and I'm getting half excited and I've maybe got 60,000.
Mm-hmm.
I'm weighing up whether I go in at, say, I don't know, 500,000 or 600,000 as a first home buyer, or do I hold off and save another 12 months, 2 years to get myself an 800K, which obviously in Victoria, we're out of stamp duty concession territory.
Mm.
In New South Wales, we're still in it. In every other part of the country, we're out of it. So how do we navigate the thought process there?
It's a really tricky one, to be honest with you. Personal circumstances play a lot into this. The 5 to 600K range kind of is apartment territory in most areas versus the 800K range is more of that villa unit townhouse territory. Mm. So the question really then becomes, irrespective of the time frame of that saving pocket, is do you want to have a 5 to 7 year plan, or do you want more of that like 10 to 15 year plan? Because really you can get more longevity out of like a townhouse or a villa unit. There's more space, makes sense. Also, there's market factors at play, because how fast is the market going to grow in that time? What is 800K today will not be 800K in 2 years' time.
Mm.
So there's no right or wrong answer in my opinion, other than to say I personally hold the belief that getting into the market sooner is always better in majority of circumstances.
Yeah. So for those living in regional, we don't even have an issue, because we just go and buy a 400, 500K, 600K house.
Yes.
3 bedrooms, 700 square meter block, dog in the backyard.
Totally.
Live happily ever after. So we're really talking about what's happening in the city centres, which unfortunately for regional listeners is probably 90% of the country's population. So we are talking to the major. But you've really got to create your own version, don't you, and say, well, okay, what's in my control right now and what's out of my control? And you mentioned about the opportunity cost of waiting 2 years. Like, that's unknown. That's really out of our control, isn't it? That 600K we get in now, it goes up 10%, that's 60 grand.
Yeah.
I might be able to only save 30 grand in the next 12 months. Therefore, I'm behind, even though I can potentially get a higher purchase price.
Most people can't outsave the market unless there is some inheritance involved or some gifting involved, which happens a lot. By the way, just touching on that, because I actually have spoken to a number of our listeners who have been wanting to buy property and they're very nervous to say they've got an inheritance or been gifted money. It's an interesting topic. It is okay. People get gifted money. Like, people get really shy, or mum and dad are helping me out. Like, you know, people don't know, but they are helping me out. Like, whatever way you can make it work, make it work. If you've got that available to you and you're fortunate enough to have that available to you in terms of a gifting, inheritance, that's not so fortunate. Obviously, inheritance usually comes when someone passes away, but people shouldn't be shy about the fact that wealth is like, it goes down generations. That's a natural occurrence. And so obviously you can't bank on it, but that to me would be the only difference really of unforeseen circumstances between that 600 versus 800K, because you cannot outsave the market.
No, no,
you're not right. Unless you're in an extremely high-paying job or maybe a business owner, yeah, potentially. But, you know, generally speaking, it's very hard to outsave the market.
So we get a gift, we get an inheritance, we can get to that 800.
Mm.
The only concern then would be your repayments.
Of course. Can you service it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I get a loan from the bank, and am I happy with that loan amount for my lifestyle that I'm running at the moment?
And also thinking about that in terms of stage of life, are you a couple buying together and you might have maternity leave involved at one point where you are dropping down to less household income? Are you potentially looking to change careers where you actually take a reduction in your income to try something new? Like, you do have to think about these things, as well as other expenses. If you do have children in the mix, what are the outgoings with that? Childcare, the fact of having a baby, that's costly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, all these things come into play. So, yeah, if we strip that right back, we're saying, okay, we've got some lending. The banks will lend us money. We've got a deposit. Now we can go and buy something. It doesn't automatically mean let's just go and buy the first thing that pops up on realestate.com. We've got to be thinking next 5 to 7 years. We've got to be thinking lifestyle. We've got to be thinking maybe wealth creation. How do we weight both of those two things? But then what's happening in that next 5 to 7 years? We don't know exactly what the goalposts are going to look like, but is there a chance, as you said, we go back to study, or we change jobs or roles or incomes? Is there a chance that we're maybe starting a family? All these situations that come into play. That inheritance one's a really interesting one. I find people are okay with getting gifted a car.
Yeah.
Right? I've got a car for my 21st or whatever it might be. But when it comes to the house, it's like, oh, no, that's sort of taboo. I'll keep that under the hat.
I can assure you now, if you listen to this, there are many, many people who are getting into the property market because of inheritance or gifting.
Mm.
It is more common than people realise, because it's this topic that people don't talk about. It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was listening to something this morning. 65% of Australia's business owners are baby boomers, right?
Yeah.
And that's how much wealth is in that age group. So if you're a son or daughter of someone who's a baby boomer, there's generally, especially in the last 5 years, having owned assets, there's an extreme amount of wealth there. And a lot of these baby boomers are saying, well, hang on a minute, I can give it to you in 20 years' time when I kick the bucket, or I can gift you some now, which is going to give you a head start.
Indeed. One thing that was just running through my brain as you were touching on some points before about forecasting the next 5 to 7 years, one thing I have experienced and witnessed a lot with people who come to buy is coming out of a separation or a divorce. So obviously we don't plan to separate with the partner that we buy with, but it does happen a lot of the time, unfortunately. Yeah. And so when you are at any point going into a financial situation with somebody, particularly buying property, because you can't, it's not very easy to get out of. No. And the timing of it. In fact, the reason it springs to mind is because a lot of the properties I'm getting a handle on at the moment are actually due to divorce and separation.
Right. That you're buying for clients.
Yes. Yeah. That I'm getting access to.
And unfortunately, that's working against them as the vendor, isn't it?
Totally. If they have to sell because of a timeline, I know that for a fact that some of them are selling at a loss in a short turnaround. Like, take a step back and be very sure, or as sure as you can be, when you're buying with somebody.
Yeah. Not only do I want to get into bed with this person, but do I actually want to buy a house with this person?
Exactly.
And just not, we've gone on a first date, now we're going into a joint venture together.
And what does that practically look like if you did part ways? How does that impact your financial situation? Is it better? I've certainly met and spoken to plenty of people who do actually have their own portfolios each, and they rent together because that's just, you know, it makes sense, and they might buy down the track, but a timing thing is that they actually just rent together and have their own assets working for them.
As people know, we've been on tour for the book launch, and we're at the time of recording. Last night we were in Brisbane, and there was a question in the crowd, very intelligently by a lady that said, "I've got a niece. She's still only like teenage years, thinking about buying her first home, which is fantastic for
That's
a start,
amazing.
Mindset-wise, which is great. However, how do we set it up so that she, if she meets a partner one day, the partner can't get their grubby hands on it?"
Yeah.
Which, it's a tough one to answer that, because you don't go into buying property with the thought of, oh, I'm going to meet someone and they're going to take my home.
Exactly.
But, so things like whether it's prenups or agreements, binding agreements, whatever they're called.
Yeah, binding financial agreements.
Yes.
One of those.
One of those BFAs. So speaking to someone before you go into any sort of relationship is key, but having that conversation with someone in the relationship is sometimes a little bit awkward, isn't it?
It can be, but I also think it's a good telltale sign if they value the independence
yes.
of you owning your own thing. They might have their own thing too, you know. I think it can actually be, and I've seen a lot of posts in the Facebook group around money mindset between couples, because raised differently, different views, and that's fine. It doesn't mean you're not compatible.
No.
But trying to be on the same page with that sort of thing is quite important, I think.
Absolutely. But I think the message is, and we mentioned it last night, it shouldn't stop you from taking action, thinking that something's going to be taken from you potentially down the track. We've still got to take action, don't we?
Yeah, and investing in the people, like when you do a financial agreement, you have lawyers, like it's funny, people, you know, have to spend, you know, X amount of dollars to get it done. Mm. Trust me.
Well spent.
It'll be worth it.
Yeah, well spent.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break and then we'll come back and talk some out-of-the-box thinking.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click Get Help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. We also have a panel of trusted mortgage brokers we can connect you with to get you into your first home, an investment property purchase, or to review your current loan if you don't have a broker. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers, and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So, John, I think, you know, this episode's around buying your first home, but I always think about the notion of buying your first property.
Yes.
Because your first purchase doesn't have to be your first home. And I love challenging people when they ring me up and say, "I've got this, this is what I want to do." And I'm like, "Hold on a second.
Pull the truck
back. Do you know your options?"
Yeah.
Because unless you open someone's mind to possibilities of what you can actually do with X amount of dollars, they don't know.
No.
How are they supposed to know?
Yeah, and we mentioned the Great Aussie Dream at the top of the show.
Mm.
It's still alive and kicking, isn't it? It's like it's through generations. Parents are still saying, look, you've got to buy your own home. It gives you security. It's a roof over your head, blah, blah, blah. Especially in these times of rental crisis and lack of housing and the insecurity of saying, well, I'm going to get kicked out of my property or the rent's going to increase $50 a week, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
So it's real, and we all get that there is some security issues there. And unfortunately, it's more prevalent with females. Like we want to get that security, which absolutely, totally understand. Sometimes we've got to look outside the square to see that there might actually be a better alternative.
Yeah.
And in the book we talk about, and for those that don't know, there's a book, Sort Your Property Out and Build Your Future.
Surely they know by now, John.
Well, they could be listening for the first time today.
Oh, you could be. Yes. Well, that's very true, but there is a book.
Yes, there
is.
And
you should buy it and you absolutely should be reading it.
So link will be in the show notes. But we talk about strategic ways to buy. And I suppose the three major ones are joint ventures.
Yep.
So Emily and John decide, yeah, we've got 100K each, or Emily's got the income, John's got the deposit, let's go and join forces and create a better asset. There's the element of rent vesting. Mm-hmm. So renting at in a place where you want to live for lifestyle purposes, and then buy anywhere around the country for the money you've got at the yield you need in the location that you think is going to be best outcome for you. Mm-hmm. And then this other one called free vesting.
I know that you love this. I think you just like saying free vesting.
I do.
Yeah.
Free.
That's fun.
So, but parents don't like me saying it.
Okay. Why not?
Because that means their kids need to stay home for an extra 5 years to save their deposit, because John told me so. So it excludes my kids but includes everyone else's, right? No, they're welcome to stay. But, yeah, the free vesting notion is saying, well, okay, I'm earning full-time income or even part-time, doesn't really matter, but I can save up to 80, 90% of my take-home pay. Mm. I can get myself a deposit within, in some cases, I've seen it happen in 12 months.
Wow.
So there's not a lot of pain there to maybe stay at home just that little bit longer while all of our friends are moving out and paying $300 or $400 a week in rent and have their bills and independence, I get it, but just that long-term mindset with a short-term time frame to get ourselves a deposit and then get ourselves on that property journey.
And look, I think, John, we've touched on many a time about the ego part of this, right?
Yes.
Saying that you live at home with your parents, or you're nervous to say that you do. Who cares?
Who cares?
Like, yeah. If it means you get to build a property portfolio faster,
yes,
you get to save money, you get to spend time with your loved ones. Now, this is providing that you do enjoy spending time with your family. Some people couldn't think of anything worse. You know, they actually don't want to live with their family. They can't live with their family.
Yeah.
It might not be an option. But for those that it works out for and it's doable, what a great advantage.
Totally. Yeah. Winning beats ego every time.
Yeah.
So there's another hybrid sort of a version of this, and I came across it. I knew about it, but I had a real life example with someone who reached out to me probably 18 months ago that moved into a regional location with a really attractive job offer, which covered majority of their rent and travel fees and moving costs and all these things, low running costs of the life, got to experience a different location, maximized savings, swung back around, bought a property and then moved back home again.
What's the terminology for that? Have you got one yet?
That
work
is
vesting?
FIFO vesting. FIFO or so. Yeah, but they weren't fly out.
No,
they were actually, they moved for, a bit of a different experience.
Yep.
And that's the cool thing that you can do in your 20s, maybe early 30s, before you want to settle down.
Totally.
I mean, if you don't want to settle down at all, you can do it your whole life. But the ability to be able to go out and meet new people, visit different areas outside of your comfort zone. But the side benefit of maximizing your savings is outstanding for getting on that journey. So when we look at the headline of, well, people can't afford to buy property anymore, when we use that sort of example, that's rubbish.
Yeah, exactly. Just on the note of the different version as well, there is one that I had heard of recently that is obvious, but it's about pet sitting.
Oh, yes.
And house sitting.
There's an episode with old mate in Country Victoria.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. So for those that have listened to the show, you've probably heard that one already, but it's a really cool way. This guy had bought a property. He'd gone pet sitting. He'd gone just general house sitting in the area and basically had no overheads. So
how good.
His work, I think it was in Melbourne, had the ability to work from home.
Yep.
So his home was just the house that he was sitting at.
Someone else's home.
All it needed was the internet, essentially.
Yep.
So, yeah, so really lean running costs of life and just high cash flow property portfolio, as well as maximising savings to buy future properties. And I think he's like early 30s, can't see himself changing anytime soon. So
it's amazing.
He's created his own version. That takes courage, but he's going to reap the rewards of that, isn't it?
You just got to have a flexible mindset, right? And also know that there could be periods where you might be in an Airbnb for a week, you know, in crossover of jobs of pet sitting or house sitting or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not for everybody. Like, I know there's people who will be like, I just want my space continually. I want my own bedroom, my own bed, all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But if you have a flexible mindset and you're pretty easygoing and higher risk, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Work.
Yeah, for sure. And like going back to the whole rent vesting approach, it is becoming more of a, I've got no other option than it was 20 years ago when I first started, or 25, whatever. It's like it was really out of the box thinking that we didn't have to do maybe during that stage. But now, especially again, Sydney, Melbourne, it's like, well, hang on, I can't afford to buy my $1 million home or 1.5, whatever it is, in my suburb. So my only option is to stay off the property train or to actually go and buy an investment property first, in the hope or forecasting that I can swing back around in 7 to 10 years' time and buy my own home. And we say 7 to 10 years, like you mentioned before, is like it gives us enough time for that property to do its thing.
Yeah.
And it gives us also enough time for us to be thinking, righto, in 7 to 10 years' time, if I'm 22 now, I'll be sort of round about that 30 mark. I should have a bit more of an idea as to what I want to be doing, where I want to be living, who I might be, do I have a partner, do I want one, those sort of things. So there's a bit more certainty going on, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think that's the hardest thing when you find yourself in a position where you have a well-paying job in your mid-20s and you're like, well, I should be, my parents are telling me I should be doing something with my money, you know, my friends are doing stuff, like what do I do? I think a lot of people, when they discover the idea of rent vesting, it makes a lot of sense.
Mm.
And it basically buys them time while their money's working for them to work out what they actually want to do and where they actually want to be.
Yeah. So you're currently rent vesting at the moment.
I am.
And you are loving it?
John, I love it.
Yeah.
My new apartment. So I've moved again. If you've been a long time listener, like you've probably heard me say, I've moved again so many times. It's got a pool. It's got a gym.
Has it?
The dog park's at the back door.
Wow.
It's got a cinema.
Cinema.
I haven't used that yet.
Wow.
24-hour concierge. I'm living my best hotel life.
Yeah.
And I looked at the repayments of what the landlord, like what they bought it for and what they'd be paying. The rent is nowhere near covering the outgoings at all.
Yeah, wow.
But they can't charge more because it's, you know, it'd be ridiculous dollars.
Yes.
There's no way I'd buy in the building, but I will definitely continue renting there.
Mm.
And meanwhile, I've got a couple of investment properties.
Mm.
I made the rookie mistake of the first one being in an area that, not that I knew, but that I could access.
Right.
The other two I have bought elsewhere in Australia, never seen them, never stepped foot in them.
Yeah.
And that's what I encourage a lot of people to consider, as you touched on before, buying anywhere in Australia, being a borderless investor so your money's working for you. Like, I'm very passionate about that.
Yeah. So let's talk about that for a little bit, is the whole risk profile. It's like, oh, hang on, you're telling me that I can't live in my own home in a suburb that I know, in the streets that I know, in the people I know, but now I have to go and buy an investment property somewhere else around the country that I don't even know the name of the town, or I don't even know the location or what it stands for, or what's propping its industries up, or the vacancy rates, all these things. We've got to really understand what our risk profile is and whether we say, yeah, I'm cool to buy in WA or Queensland or Tasmania or wherever it might be, or some of us might be seeing you saying, look, for the first one, I want to keep it in state because that's what's going to allow me to sleep at night.
Of course. And look, this is not a plug for buyer's agents because, you know, long-term listeners will know that's not really what we're about as such. But to reduce the risk in buying somewhere that you don't know anything about, like that's literally the job of a buyer's agent, is to know where to buy, what's going on in that area. They do all the research. Like, really, if you're at the point of buying an investment property, you're probably in a job that demands your time. You know, you've got a full-time job. Then you've got commitments outside of that. To do it justice of researching areas like macro and micro factors of that area and the property and the market. Like, I actually don't know. I mean, I know I didn't end up doing it myself, but I don't know how people do it.
Yeah.
You've got to be very passionate. And there are some very passionate listeners on our show who will do it themselves, and they've probably done a very good job, but it's not the majority, in my opinion.
No. And we do work with some that love to find their own property. And,
yes.
And we have created a hybrid version of our BA service where we set the strategy, they go and get their hands dirty searching.
Yeah.
But you touched on that time thing, and I think there's four reasons as to why you might consider outsourcing. Time, knowledge, confidence, backing ourselves in, and then relations with agents, people on the ground, et cetera, et cetera. So if you've got maybe three out of those four ticked, I think you can make it work.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
But if you've got one of them, I've got plenty of time, but you're missing the other three, then that's probably where you just need to look deeper into some other options. But yeah, it's definitely broadens your horizons as to what's out there.
Of course. And how could you possibly, like, Australia is a massive country. Mm. Like, geographically, how could you possibly know where the best place to buy is when it's so damn big?
Yeah. So I'll give them a quick cheat sheet on how they can do that.
Okay.
Yeah. And location is last.
Right.
So if you're sitting there on realestate.com now as you're listening to this, get off it or domain or any of those other search engines, right, or whatever. So get off that and think about, what do I want long term? Is it capital growth or is it cash flow? Is it a combination of both? And understand the yield and the price point that you need to come in at.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's 500K or 600K or 800K, what allows you to sleep at night? How much do the banks lend you? And then the yield, working out the gross yield to then work out the net yield to understand, okay, I can handle those running costs. So I'm at 6% interest rate. It's renting at 500 a week. It's going to cost me this plus property management, insurances, council rates, et cetera. I can handle the running cost of that. So that becomes my yield, mm-hmm. right? And that's a bit of a quick analysis. But so once we find the price and the yield, we then say, right, what's the best type of investment that's going to perform for me long term?
Yes.
Generally speaking, what do most Australians want? Well, most Australians, because we need to think about who's going to buy it off us in 10 years' time if we want to sell.
Of course.
Generally speaking, that's maybe a family or someone that wants to be a family or someone that needs a home office. So it's going to require minimum two, but probably three minimum bedrooms.
Yes.
And then if we've got kids, we've got backyard. So that's a house with
or dogs.
Or dogs, yes. Don't generally any pets at all, right? So we haven't spoken about location at all up until that point.
No.
But by working out those three things, price point, yield and type, we've now eliminated probably 12,000 suburbs across Australia.
Yes.
So now we can jump on realestate.com and have a bit of fish around.
Mm-hmm.
Then we shortlist some and then do some research into, are those areas going to work for us in terms of the parameters? And we talk about that deeply in the book in terms of vacancy rates, owner-occupier percentages, unemployment, flood, bushfire, and then micro indicators on the ground, busy roads, avoid them, slope, major slope, avoid them, all those sort of things. So, yeah, that's a bit of a crash course on how you can have a little bit of a go at this thing.
I'm glad you wrote a book on it because there's so many things to know. Honestly, just as you were listing those things off, I'm like, oh, yeah. Like,
you do
there's so many
those.
Factors.
Yeah. And if you miss one of them,
yeah,
you can really, it can really come back to bite you.
Yeah. Big time.
So let's sort of start to bring this home, Emily.
No pun intended.
Let's start to bring your home for you. So where are you sitting at? As a listener, now we're saying, I've already bought my first home, I'm happy with it. Or if you've done all that, well done. Just sit on it and don't be stressed out about what you have got.
Mm.
If you're sitting there saying, well, I don't really know what I want, we need to think how heavily you want to actually live in your own home, and because that's a big factor, isn't it?
That's a huge factor. There's some people who, irrespective of the dollars and cents, it's I want to live in my own home for whatever reason, security piece, rental market, all these factors, like I just want my own home, and that can be the deciding factor really as to what avenue they take.
Yeah, the growth, the wealth means nothing
yeah.
if that is your number one priority.
Yeah.
weirdly and that's okay. enough, but I get that.
Yeah, that's totally fine and that's okay. If you're in the other, on the other side of the fence of, well, I don't have to be in my own home.
Yeah.
I'd like to be, but I don't have to be. Then it's more about the numbers side of things rather than the emotional side of things.
Yes.
And people know you're the numbers guy, I'm the emotional gal. So somewhere in between there's a...
But you don't really get emotional.
No. I don't. I take the emotion out of buying is what I usually say.
Yes. It is fair to say that when you're buying your own home to live in or when you're finding people homes to live in,
yes,
there is a has to be an emotional component to it because, you're going to be living there. You could be spending the next 20 years. You could be spending the next 5 years. You've got to be reasonably comfortable in its location and its type of property. And that's another episode in itself, isn't it?
Sure.
It's like, okay, which one's more important to me, the actual location or the type of property?
Yeah. And also making sure that it's what's important to you, not the people who are in your ear about the decision to buy. Because we know that there's plenty of experts. When you just say you're about to buy a property, well, everyone's an expert, aren't they?
Yeah, it's like having kids, like being a parent. Like, okay, everyone's an expert in parenting.
Yeah.
Eliminate the noise and the fluff and even a lot of the online stuff, to be honest. Like, we probably contribute to that by having an online forum. But you've just got to know what you actually want first before you go looking outside for that.
Yeah.
So if it's not your first home to live in, if that's not feasible for one reason or another, then you might consider the rent vesting option. Seriously consider the free vesting. The joint venture we didn't touch upon too much today, but we have done previous episodes on that. But I think it's a great way to, again, fast track your investing and get into the market sooner rather than later, because a lot of people are sitting there today quite deflated on what they can buy at the minute.
Yes.
And knowing that if you've got someone that's trusted in your corner that isn't necessarily your partner, it is quite a good way to get into the market. And I think, like, out of the first maybe five properties I did, I think two of them were JVs.
Yep.
And that was purely from the point of view of self-employed, didn't have the turnover or lending servicing, had the deposits. Okay, we can make it work with someone that has.
Yep. Smart.
Well,
love it.
Maybe.
Yeah, but, maybe.
Well, I think the key for me was I just wanted to take action.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And those that take action, 1 in 10 will take action, the 9 won't. Now, one that takes action and makes a little bit of a boo-boo will still be ahead of the 9 that haven't taken action at all.
Without getting too philosophical, I heard a quote recently that said, "The only metric that ever matters is the time from which you make the decision to when you actually take action."
Oh,
that
I like
gap
that.
In between
defines
whether you are going to be successful or not. And I was like, that's so true.
Yes.
Like, the rest doesn't matter. And that's not just property. That's like literally anything, right?
Yeah, absolutely everything.
Mm.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's good. All right.
Before we go, quick question. How's it been seeing the people, the listeners?
It's great seeing the people again, to be honest. Yeah. Every capital city or the ones that we visited have their own little nuances.
Yes.
And, they're different vibes, but good vibes nonetheless. Great people. It's so awesome to see people in the flesh that listen to the show. Some get dragged along just because they want to come and have a drink and a feed. But, it's pretty cool. And, I really want to thank everyone for obviously coming along to those events, but listening to the show. We wouldn't be able to do this stuff without them. So, 100%. It's awesome to meet them. And just like last night in Brisbane, I think the oldest was maybe 70.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, youngest like 13, 14.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Really?
So maybe it's the brand change. I don't know. But
we've opened ourselves up to everybody.
I think so.
No more just millennial.
Yeah, but it's so cool. Like the 70-year-olds, they know more than you and I combined.
Yeah.
And the 13-year-old's like, oh, wow, a lot of this is going over my head, but I'm taking in two or three different bits of pieces that get me motivated. And
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So
love it. All because of this podcast.
That's it, Emily. That's it.
Wouldn't be here if people didn't listen to it. So thanks for listening to us.
Keep listening. And you know what they say in the States, hit the subscribe button.
Yeah.
And
down below, hit the subscribe button.
That's right. And share it. Send it to a friend. Yeah.
All that good stuff.
So,
we appreciate it. We'll be back next week. Another episode, as always.
Sounds good. Until next time, take care.
Bye.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast. It's time to get the property you want. If buying your first home or investing in property is something you're interested in, check out John Pidgeon's book, Sort Your Property Out and Build Your Future. John covers the essentials like how to find hotspots and notspots, due diligence, mortgages, tax stuff, grants and schemes, and how to set up your investing timeline. It's the only book you'll need about buying and investing in property. Visit sortyourpropertyout.com to grab your copy. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Simo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.